actually trying to do some practical stuff, like implementing a SNARK circuit to process a roll of transactions. So if you want to follow along, you are welcome to. Yeah, so if you want to install any requirements, they are over here. And this link is public. I do not buy a domain, so it's, you can use this one.
That's the question. Is there anything more? I mean, are you going to do anything more than following some tutorials online? Or?
Yeah, I created this tutorial, and it's mostly going to be like me explaining how roll-up works, and maybe creating a circuit for it live.
Okay.
Is
ZK rollup is all about using SNARK for their not for their privacy aspect, but for creating succinct proofs, so that we can verify lots of computation done off chain in a on a smart contract on Ethereum chain. So for rollup, we basically do all the signature aggregation, balance checks, changing all the balances for the participants involved in our transactions off chain, and we batch all the transactions together and submit the SNARK proof as well as the compressed transactions on chain. So as a ZK rollups are basically a layer 2 solution, and unlike Plasma, we don't really have to worry about things like data being not available and users being like in Plasma, users have to continuously watch their coins so that they can come, they can be active and submit challenges if anything bad happens, right? Rollup has no such assumption. So a SNARK proves the validity that the transaction, that the computation done off-chain is actually valid, right? So it's pretty simple. So we have two actors involved in a rollup chain. There's a coordinator and there is user. So the coordinator basically takes all the transactions, which is like inputs and signatures from the users via RPC endpoint or API or anything like that. And he basically generates a batch and passes all the transactions to the SNARK circuit. The SNARK does all the processing and emits the updated root hash and the SNARK proof. So on an Ethereum smart contract, we maintain a balanced Merkle tree, right? So it's like the Merkle tree, and the leaves contain balances and accounts of all the users, right? And this root hash of this Merkle tree can only be updated by a SNARK proof, right? So as soon as the batch is processed by a coordinator, he submits the SNARK proof on-chain, and the on-chain verifier checks if the proof is correct, and if the proof is correct, the new root is updated in the smart contract, right? So yeah, this is why rollup seems really amazing to me. So it has no exit games, and it has no likeness assumptions, no data availability issues. The transaction fees is still very, very less, Yeah, and basically we can create rollup chains not only for payments. We can do stuff like CryptoKitties. We can do stuff like what Fairwind did, like any sort of smart contract, right? So it's basically a Snark storage layer, basically. You can put anything you want in the leaf of the Merkle tree, and it will work, right? Yeah, so for the purpose of this tutorial sort of thing, we are using Circom and Snark.js. They're basically JavaScript-based compilers. Yeah, and these are basic commands. You can like hop back to them whenever it's needed. We'll mostly need them every time we do a compilation and we create an input, right? So I'm just going to show how to create one simple constraint, which is like a arithmetic constraint. We are going to see if A plus B equals C and create a snark proof for it, right? So that we can go anywhere and prove to someone that this computation was done correctly, right? So it's pretty simple as you can see. Just like create a template. Template is just like a circuit, and the inputs, they are called signals. So every variable is a sort of signal. For you can imagine circuits like electronics circuits, right? So in electronics circuits also we have signals in inputs and outputs as well. So here we are accepting three private inputs. We are calling it A, B, and C. And we have one public input, it's called C, right? And we create an output signal called out, yeah. And this is that we are forcing a constraint. We are basically forcing A plus B to be equal to C, which is provided as a public input. So we can basically prove that 2 plus 2 equals 4 without getting to know what the first two variables were. We don't need to know that they were 2 and 2. Yeah, that's what. So they can be 1 and 3, or they can be 3 and 1. We don't really need to know here. So this basically creates a constraint for addition. We can do one for multiplication as well, like this. It's pretty simple. And whatever we need to give as a output, we just force a constraint and we assign to the output variable. So as you can see, it's pretty simple, right? Yeah. So as soon as we are done with the, so is anyone following around or should I wait? Yeah, cool. So if anyone wants to compile it and generate inputs, and so first of all, from the Circom circuit, we create a compiled version, and it's called it's basically JSON representation of the constraint in the circuit, right? And then we basically have to create inputs. So the inputs for this would basically be A, B, C, A, B, D, and C, right? So we just put that in a file. I can show you that part. Yeah. Yeah. So this thing basically is the.
Can you zoom in?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So here we just pass the inputs 2, 4, 6, and 24. And we create an input.json, right, which has all of these variables. And then we basically, when you have input.json ready, we calculate witness, which is like the inputs we are going to provide to Snark, that the input basically satisfies all the constraints defined in the circuit. So if this command throws an error, that basically means your input's not going to pass the Snark circuit. That so something is wrong with the input, right? And this is the trusted setup. It's currently only on your laptop, so it's going to be pretty unsafe. And then we can create a proof, and we can do Snark.js verify, which will basically tell you if the proof was right or not. So if it displays okay, then it was good. If it says invalid, then something went wrong. Your input did not satisfy all the constraints defined in the circuit, right? Yeah, sure.
What's growth?
Yeah?
What's growth and what are the other options?
Sure. So growth is like growth 16, which is the most efficient prover. There are some other options. You can do dash dash protocol and help. It's like, I guess, I don't really know. I've always been using this one, right?
Yeah,
Browse Windows 17, which is an updated version. Yeah. And there's some older versions as well,
which is like the
speed. Yeah. So if you guys want, I can run these and show you, but it takes quite a while to run all the proofs, right? So I'm gonna hop ahead. If someone wants to run, I'll be happy to debug if there's any issues. Cool. So we are going to verify EDDSA signature next. So so in SNARKs it's much more easier to verify EDDSA signature than Ethereum or Bitcoin signatures because it requires lesser number of constraints, right? So there's a library called Circumlib, and they export a template. It's called EDDSA MIMSI verifier. Have you heard? So there's a hash function called MIMSI because SHA-256 is like way too costly to use inside a SNARK. So this is like MIMSI uses much less number of constraints, and it's therefore the proving time is low. And for the purpose of this workshop, this level of security should be just fine. Right? So it's very easy to use this template. We just like pass the from for a EDDSA pub key, there are two parts, the x coordinate and there's a y coordinate, right? So in the verifier we send the x coordinate, and here we send the y coordinate, and this is parts of signature, and this is the message that we want to check the signature against, right? So if the calculate witness things run smoothly, then your signature was basically correct, right? Yeah.
So, real world scenario, which verifier we should use?
Yeah.
You said that this verifier is only for the demo proof of stake, right?
Which one?
That is efficient but very secure.
Yeah. The security is not widely researched yet, so people generally tend to avoid this because it's not the security is not really proven at the moment. But it's not broken. It's not proven either. So people generally tend to avoid it, but it's fine for the case of workshop.
It's very hard to prove the security of hash function. So MIMSI we think is alright, and today we have something for like a $20,000 value of conditions
on
MIMSI, but we still don't know, so that's what we are trying to say.
Yeah.
And if not MIMSI, is there any other one which works well?
Peterson works pretty good.
That is pretty confident about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's slow, right? I think.
Sorry? That's
slow, right?
It's not as slow as 256, but it's slower than MIMSI.
What is the content required? Because this is already kind of, you don't leak any information about the private key. So what will you hide?
No. In this, we are just trying to verify a signature inside a SNARK. We are not trying to make things private in this circuit. Yeah. Because while verifying transaction for rollup, we'll have to verify if a transaction submitted by a from address is actually signed by.
Got it. So no private key.
No. Yeah. Cool. So, the next part is like creating a Merkle root for given leaves, and yeah. So in here we basically have two or three variables, which like path to root is basically the leaves in the Merkle proof, right? And path to root position is basically binary vector. So let's say there's a leaf at index 0 in path to root. So part to root position at index 0 will basically have 0 or 1. 0 means that the leaf is left, 1 means it's right. Right? So we'll see how that's used in like later, right? This is a output signal. So multi-mem C7 basically creates a hash if you provide it inputs. The first parameter here too is like the number of inputs you want to give it, right? So so if part to root position is 0, the Merkle root, the first input to memc becomes the leaf itself, right? So this is how the binary vectorization works. So if this thing is 0, then the first input becomes leaf, and because this thing is also 0, the second input becomes the sibling, right? And if it's 1, then the first input becomes part the leaf, and the second input becomes the actual leaf that we want to prove the path for, right? Does that make sense? So we then we basically just do the same thing but over a loop, right? And like we can just basically copy paste this part over here, and as soon as we have filled all the inputs, if we do Merkle root dot out, which is basically this template dot out, so it basically gives us a hash of the leaf, right? So whatever we have passed over here, doing dot out over it gives us a hash. So if we give like 2 and 3, dot out gives us a hash of those two inputs, right? So it's basically used to create hashes of leaves so that we can get a Merkle tree, right? And this part is checking the existence of a leaf in a tree. It's also pretty pretty basic. We just like take the paths and we assign elements like we did over here, and this part basically tells us if the dx root that we have given, if the root given over here matches the root that we have just created inside the snark, right?
Isn't there basically anything? There is an operator, the arrows, but something right
on the this was basically designed as a workshop, so because of bad internet connections, I tried to skip it, but so people basically had to enter these values, but I can show you the snark circuit over here.
Maybe at the end, we can like let people try and fill in the stuff and help people with the extra time.
Yeah, sure. Sounds good, yeah. So just to show you the circuit, whatever was missing is present in this file. It's present on GitHub. I'll give out the link in a while. Yeah. So it's the samples circuits are present here, right? So whatever was missing over there is. So I'm just going to do how deposits work, how withdraw work in a rollup chain, right? So basically, the operator gets all the transaction, and it like let's say a snark batch is supposed to be of 10 transactions, right? So the operator, if he has 20 transactions, he picks up top 10 according to the correct nonce, and he provides it to the snark circuit, and we go from root 1 to root 2. And we submit all the transactions and the snark proof on chain. So yeah, this is how state transitions work for snark, for rollup, right? So the account is basically like this. It's the x coordinate of the public key, the y coordinate, the balance, nonce, and the token type, right? And the leaf is basically the hash of all of this, right? right? But for the workshop, we are just going to do balance only. So no nonce, no token type. But we can in a rollup chain, we can actually have multiple tokens trading simultaneously, and the operator can accept fees in any or all of them, right? So yeah. So this is how account looks like. So it's a key, balance, nonce, and type, and the balance history is this, right? So we basically change the account root every time we submit a batch on chain, right? And in a transaction, we have from index, which is like the leaf index in the Merkle tree, and we have two address and amount, nonce, the token type. Yeah. So deposits to rollup chain are like they're pretty interesting. So what we do here is deposits happen totally on chain, right? So as soon as someone deposits, let's say one ETH, it's pushed to an array. As soon as someone deposits, someone does a second deposit, both the deposits are hashed together, and they are like a tree is created, right? So yeah, this is the first deposit, second deposit, and it's the hash. Then as soon as we have a third deposit, then we wait for a fourth deposit. As soon as it's done, we create a hash and we combine them together. So what we can do is, whenever we want to include the deposits in the rollup chain, we just pick up the latest root and we attach it to the existing balance tree. So we create a whole new subtree, and a snark proof is created, which basically just proves that this leaf was empty, and the deposit tree has been inserted over here. Yeah. Yeah. So this was the old account tree, and now the new account tree becomes that whole thing, and just the deposit root gets placed over here. Right. So withdrawing is also like a simple state transition, like a transfer state transition. So like people just send their tokens to leaf index 0, which can only receive tokens. Leaf number 0 cannot actually spend any token. This is defined in the snark. So people have to do a transfer to leaf index 0, and then they can go on chain, and then they can prove in the latest Merkle root that it did a transaction to leaf index 0, and they'll get their tokens back from the deposit pool, right?
Earlier you had mentioned that the ZK rollup is needing a data availability assumption.
Sure.
Don't you need data availability assumptions to be able to properly process a withdrawal from your Merkle tree, because you need to know the intermediary trees?
So with every snark proof that we submit on chain, we submit a condensed form of transaction, right? So using that, anyone can come and prove that basically all the transactions that have been processed in the latest snark are present on chain. So the data availability is same as Ethereum chain.
I just missed it in the meeting. It seems like, I mean, does this example really have anything to do with accounts and balances, or there's just a state transition function from trees to trees, and you're trying to show that basically the trees that were produced were correct? Or I don't know, what does that do with accounts and balances, really?
Yeah, so in the state transition function, right, which is like written inside a snark, we basically say that, let's say Alice is transferring $50 to Bob, right? So in that, we basically check if Alice exists in the tree, if he has $50 to spend, and then we basically change his, let's say Alice had 100, right? So we change his balance from 100 to 50, and we increment Bob's balance, if he exists in the tree, from 0 to, let's say, 50. and we update the snark merkle root. Yeah, so this is how state transition happened, and we submitted the updated root on chain. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so it's not really about account. It's pretty general.
Yeah, it's pretty general. You can basically store anything inside the leaf and write a state transition around it.
With some condition.
Yeah, with some condition. Anything that can be. Yeah, so this is basically just like doing all the checks inside the snark. I think I'm going to skip all the steps and we are going to go to the final circuit so I can show you how it's actually happening.
One question. So it's not only validates one transaction, it's one.
For validating multiple transactions, you just do the same thing with a for loop for the number of transactions you want to process. Right now it processes only one, but I have a section over here which is for multiple transactions, okay. And you can like check it out.
Why do you do it for the intermediate routes?
Yeah, so after, is it there?
It was the previous page.
Okay, so the thing is, as soon as we process one input, we should update the accounts tree. Otherwise, if a leaf is changing multiple times inside the same batch, then it may be able to double spend, right? So let's say in a batch, Alice had only 50 bucks, and she was able to get both of those transactions in the same batch. So if we don't update the merkle root after processing every transaction, then when the snark is processing the second transaction of Alice, the circuit will never know that a previous transaction already spent the 50 bucks that she had, right? Make sense? Yeah, so this is pretty standard. We take the inputs as the previous account roots, the intermediate root. Since this is just for one transaction, so it has only one intermediate root. If you wanted to do multiple, this would be an array. And here is these are all the accounts. These are all the balances. The balances in an array. And here's where you provide all the transaction input, right? Which is like the sender pub key, sender balance, receiver pub key, receiver balance, amount, the sender signatures, and the proof of existence for sender and receiver, right? And we output the new accounts root after processing everything, right? Cool. So I guess part three we did a part where we in part two we did a part where we showed the existence of Merkle leaf, I guess. Yeah, leaf existence, right? So using this template over here. Using that, we are basically going to prove that a sender account exists in the previous account root, which is provided as an input, right? So we just pass the pub keys and balance, we do the same thing for all the senders given in the batch, right? And then we just do a simple signature check that if the sender has actually signed the message. Yeah, and then we create a new leaf hash. So if the leaf hash previously contained like pub key balance, which was 50, then after spending 50, his leaf would look like pub key and 0. So we need to create new hash for this, and we need to update the accounts root. So this basically outputs the intermediate root. Right. Yeah. And using this intermediate route, we basically check if the receiver exists in the tree or not. If he exists, then we credit the receiver with whatever amount was sent by the sender. Yeah. Here's where we debit the sender, and this is where we credit the receiver, and then we basically just create a new leaf for the receiver again, and we update the route for it, right? And we just output the final route as the new route of the new Merkle tree with updated balances, right? And then we just then we run the below commands, and we get a proof which we can submit on change the minify transactions, right? So that we basically prove that the state transition that was done off chain was valid, and we push the transaction on chain for data availability.
So where was the check that the transaction hash corresponds to the hash suggest? Or was that check,
Which one?
That the transaction hash, the previous transaction, the account matches the leaf root. The account information, the previous account information matches the leaf.
Yeah. So basically, let me rephrase the question, and you can tell me if I'm correct or not, right? So you are basically asking if the accounts route submitted over here, if it had the correct balance that Alice gave me or not. Yeah. If it did not, then when I submit on chain, the previous route hash, which is submitted on chain, won't match with the input submitted over here, right? So it has to be changed. That makes sense. Cool. Yeah. So I wanted to create a smart contract via this generate verifier call, and this basically creates the proof that we need to push on chain. Right, so if you guys want to try this out, then maybe we can do that now. Yeah, are there any questions with this? Yeah, so.
Maybe take the thing pretty big again, so.
Yeah, sure. Link of the workshop, and this is the tutorial. So that basically assigns the signal value and creates a constraint.
Why do both?
Yeah, so let's say there are two signals, right? Yeah. Let's say there are two signals, A and B, and I want to put the input in C, and I want to make sure it checks. Like there's a constraint that C should always equal A plus B. At that time, I do the angle bracket and equals, right? So there's a link in this workshop which basically directs to IDEN3's blog post on how to use Snap.js and Circom. So that basically has an explanation on how to use all the operators. Yeah. answer. So you can clone this repo for all the code base, all the sample circuits and input JavaScript files.
So he's going to be up after the conference?
Sure.
Okay, cool.
Everybody has the links, I think.
For multiple transactions, are you able to build it in single circuit or do you have to do two circuits?
No, no. We can actually include multiple. We can use multiple circuits from a single circuit. So for multiple transactions, I just had to put a for loop for single transaction and had to create intermediate route after processing every leaf. Right, so just putting a for loop where it was.
And even the circuit size gets
it gets pretty big. But that's why it takes like 20, 30 minutes to update on my PC. Yeah.
What is the actual
effect
of the balance?
Yes, the answer.
Just out of curiosity, what is the size of the proving key for many transactions?
It is pretty big. I don't really have the numbers right now, but there's a link here if you want to see that. If you want to check how multiple token transfers work, there are test cases and input files over here. Feel free to try them out.
Oh, it's already pre-generated on GitHub?
Yes, they're on GitHub. Yeah, so everyone has the links. Create a verifier solidity contract for you, and then you can just deploy in remix and check the proof.
So it's part of Smart JDK.
Yeah. So if you want to follow along, it's like pretty simple. All the code is present here. You just have to rename most of the files, right? So if you just clone this, then it should work pretty well for you. And this link is present in requirements over here. Okay. Cool. So I can maybe do this part quickly to just show how it works. Create a file called circuit.com and copy paste this code. And then we can move forward with it. Then it basically means that the proof which is generated would most likely be correct. We can, I can try changing the input and see if it breaks, right? Yeah, so if I change any inputs and A plus B don't equal the C thing, then it will basically show that the constraint does not match, right? So you can do the same thing for verifying a EDDSA signature and doing a Merkle tree proofs, like proving that a leaf exists in a Merkle tree and creating a Merkle root, all of that stuff. Yeah. So I'm gonna try processing a single transaction over here. Yeah, so in the file structure, if you go to the fourth folder called single.ts, it basically has the circuit and the
The calculate witness, does it not produce, there's no output?
Yeah.
Where does it go?
Yeah. So it creates a file called witness.json, and it has all the public and private inputs. All the public inputs. Yeah.
Well, then
it's same as the input JSON, basically.
No. So it has all the input. JSON is basically all the inputs you need to provide to calculate witness. Create a witness.
To create a witness. Can you open it one more time?
Sure.
And so.
So it has.
You got, just so the numbers that are listed here. I mean, they're not. They don't really. They don't need anything like whatever. They're random. Or they're kind of like random, but.
Yeah.
The length of this thing is short. You're basically all just saying that the length of this thing is short because it's I just so I understand, like the length of this array of whatever five numbers is because the circuit is very simple.
Yeah, exactly. So for a circuit with like larger number of constraints, the witness file would also be large because the number like so it depends on the number of inputs you are giving.
This is all kind of new to me, so the constraints that are there versus the computation that happens? Like, how does that affect the size of this thing? Like, if the constraints are, like, for example, computing hash, you say, I mean, yeah, there's lots of computation there, but there's very little logical constraints about, like, the size, the assertions that you make on it. Like, here you have assertions that, about the arguments, but then, you know, you may produce, like, bindings inside of a circuit to, like, bind new variables and say that, like, also this, so, like, does that make sense? Like, when you make circuits like this, just, like, what constraints on things matter versus, like, just raw computation? You know, like,
yeah, so, like, every, you want to wait?
Okay. So let me repeat the question to make sure.
Yeah.
So what you're trying to do is get an intuition for, like, the this idea of constraints, like, how many constraints matters.
Or versus, like, raw computation, or so, like, I can say something like the lead binding in this language or whatever that says, like, let A equal hash of these things versus, like, A plus B equals C is, like, the assertion that the entrance has to follow.
So you want to see what's different in the witness calculation and the constraints.
Yeah.
So, okay, the witness calculation is yeah, it's just like that.
Yeah.
I mean, in some languages it takes longer, but that's just because they're not very well optimized. But like when you get optimal, it's always. Yeah. So if we had a DEX, we would spend like 0.0001% of your time calculating witness, and all the rest of the time.
Yeah, so we can do the same thing. We just have to write a new circuit that we defined in the previous parts, and we really have to like check the sender's leaf, receiver's key, the balances, and we need to update the amounts, right? So I'll just move to like processing a single transaction, and you guys can try out the rest parts, and I'll be here to help her out, right? Alice's private key, and we create a Bob's private key, right? And we have Alice's pub key, we have Bob's pub key, and we are basically using these two helper files from Circumlib. Yeah, and we basically create an account for Alice, and we create an account for, and we hash the pub keys and the balance together as it was given in the tutorial, right? And we use MIMSI, and then we create a leaf account for Bob, and we create a leaf hash for Bob, and we basically generate an initial account root for both these accounts. So since it's only two accounts, we just need to hash them together, and we'll get a Merkle root. That's right. Then we need to do a simple transaction, and from Alice to Bob, and Alice needs to sign that transaction. So we send a private key over here, and we get a signature over here. Then we generate a new account. So Alice first. Alice is basically trying to send 500 tokens here. Alice in the previous state route had 500 tokens, and Bob had zero. So after transferring, Alice should have zero, right? So we create the intermediate route. As soon as we process a leaf, we need to create an intermediate route so that Alice is not able to spend the 500 tokens she spent earlier again, right? So we create a new new leaf hash, and we declare it as the intermediate route. Then we update the Bob's account, right, with the money he got from Alice, and we create a leaf hash for it, and that's the final route. And we pass all of this as inputs. To the circuit, and we dump all of this data in input.json file, right? And when we basically run calculate witness, it uses these inputs to generate a witness, and later we can use the witness file to create proofs, right? You want me to try out, or you guys want to do it? I can try out.
Can you do it?
Yes, sure. So it takes a while because this circuit has lot many constraints than the previous one, and it basically uses other circuits. So like every signature verification adds its own constraints. Checking out Merkle root adds its own constraints, right? So it takes a while. This will create an input file for us. If I try to change the input or witness after this, it won't work.
Assuming that you did it once, is there some way of some roll-up jet where you just you did that one time and you made a circuit for, but you don't want to prove it every time, so this is, you can't, never mind, sorry, that doesn't mean
So you basically have to create a proof every time you create a new batch, right?
Yeah.
So,
no.
Yeah, at most we can do, we can parallelize it and using vanilla JS, we can predict if I process this batch of transactions, the new Merkle root would be this, and I can in parallel start processing next batch while the proof for previous batch is being created.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I created the proof before coming here because it takes a lot of time. So if you guys want to try it out, maybe you can run these commands. I can try running them, but it takes quite a lot of time.
A lot of time? How much?
So it depends on the number of constraints. For this, it will take 2 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's fine.
Also, this is about the language that we want to make use of.
Yeah, so so this trusted setup is basically one party right now, but I guess identity people have been working on doing MPC with Snark.js as well. So yeah.
What is MPC?
So it's like multi-party computation, and lot of people run the setup, and they're supposed to discard the toxic waste. Yeah. So if let's say 10 people participate, and even if one of them is honest, then it should be fine. And because we are the big participant over here, if we can basically create create false proofs. But if we had multiple participants, like let's say 100, 200, then it should be fine.
Okay. Yeah, so it takes a lot of time. I can't do anything about it. So
if you guys want to try it out, I'll be here to help out, and I'll be here to if you have any questions or stuff.
What question?
Yeah.
What about the debug tools? So if I'm writing my script and I don't see that what's going on inside.
I think there's a log flag, so you can actually write logs, but I guess people are still working on a compiler, so I guess it should be out soon.
It's early days.
If you wishes to switch the proof system like Sonic or some other one, which of these libraries you would reuse and which you have to throw away? Is there anything that you would reuse if you change the proving system?
I guess we'll have to create new libraries for the new proving systems. Yeah, so I guess we'll have to create new.
It would be the same. The circuit compiler that will stay or not?
So the compiler is just for like going from Circom language to the R1CS constraints.
So that
yeah, that part can most probably stay. From there, if there's a new proving system out, you can maybe use that part. Mm-hmm.
It's likely that there's some different optimization packages that you have, but the optimizers are coming to separate. Okay, so you can still have a lot of language stuff, OpenCS, and then but if you want to do Stark, it's a different story.
Yeah.
And if you want to do, I think Plonk is a little bit different, it's OpenCS, so that is a little bit different.
So these links would be online, and you can try them out, and you can maybe reach me out on Telegram or Twitter if you have any questions, if I can help out.
What's your name?
Bhairav Shilani.
There's a bunch of groups in the workbook at the end, there's groups that you can go into.
I have some links in the tutorial as well. We have a small demo where we basically do a transaction via web wallet that we have created. Maybe you can see that as well. There's a bunch of stuff in the links here. And we have been working on a thing called Rollup NC, which is like Rollup Non-Custodial. What it does is that it basically does not push the transactions on-chain. So when you try to push transactions on-chain, that basically limits the amount of transactions that we can process to the amount of transactions that can be submitted in a block. So we are limited by the Ethereum gas limit. But if we don't push transaction on chain, then we can like process a lot more transactions in a single batch. So this is for things like if you want to make Twitter on a roll-up chain and it's blazing fast. Stuff like that.
Yeah, so... I think I maybe finally understood what you were... maybe not, but what you said about the parallel computation, so is it possible to put like a proof constraint in this language also? Like, basically like what I would say is like these arguments satisfy, like let's say you wanted to run something like in parallel or whatever, like I have some setup which is like, yeah, the arguments to this thing also satisfy like this relationship between each other, and I want to express the fact that there is a proof of this in you. I guess what I'm saying is if you run around in parallel and say you had some really expensive thing you was going to run before some other really expensive thing, but you just wanted to express that like it was all going to match up if you did to create one circuit between the two of them, like rather than having like one function that describes something really complicated, you could break it up and then basically like you don't save any time by basically breaking it up into smaller pieces that would compose to like a larger circuit drivers, because you have several, you have tons of constraints or whatever, if you, that are all related to the same data, and maybe some of them could have been run in parallel, do you save any time by splitting them off into different circuits or?
Yeah, so I guess we are already splitting them off into different circuits. So yeah, that basically does not save us much time because the circuit, the constraints of those circuits are compiled and they are taken into like when we generate a proof, yeah. those constraints are still added to the constraints of the original circuit. Oh. Yeah, so there's no such thing as like multiple circuits.
Yeah.
You like run one circuit.
There is kind of this idea of putting multiple nesting snacks on the snack in the snack.
Yeah.
That thing that's in here.
Or just like you looked this and you had some conditions about the data that like some of them some of them are dependent on others or whatever, like you had some relationship between all of them.
Yeah, so like this you can basically like let's say you have a batch of transactions. Right?
Yeah.
So even before the circuit creates a proof of them, you can basically say if all the transactions in the batch are correct, then this will be the new proof, and you can use the new proof to run another proof in parallel of that. So if yeah, that's very fine. So if the first proof is like if it runs perfectly, then we can we don't really have to wait to like start the process again. That thing can be parallel.
Yeah.
How expensive is to verify a snark in a snark for this proof system? How many gates?